Welcome to Documentary Diehards, the show where three sports fans break down one 30-for-30 documentary each and every episode. Ren, Sam, Nick, we're back at it again. Not at 30-for-30, though, as I just said. We have made our return after 5 months. A hiatus, much needed rest. We all were napping that entire time. We're back. A little special episode for our return. Sam, what are we reviewing today?
Well, since we all played some pretty terrible golf this summer, we thought that we would kick off our restart here with Tiger, the two-part HBO series about the life and trials and tribulations of Tiger Woods.
So no 30 for 30? How dare we?
I know. Yeah, we debated this for a long time. And at first, I think Ren was a little hesitant to record things that weren't 30 for 30. But I think it was you, wasn't it?
I love my formats.
You love your formats. But I was like, we can make special editions where we just talk about things that we want to talk about. And we all have watched this documentary and like Tiger Woods and like the story. So figured we could dive into this a little bit.
Yeah, and I know we probably don't want to talk about this, but it's an elephant in the room, and we are in a contract dispute with ESPN, so we're just showing them for what we're worth. You know, HBO called, and we wanted to at least give them a little bit of a trial period and see if we're a good match there. So I just wanted to throw that
out. There's not a lot we can comment on. There's a lot of back and forth with our representatives, but we'll just say that it is up in the air right now.
Our lawyers, I probably said too much compared to what our lawyer Hannah wants us to.
Your agent is texting you right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just keep talking about the documentary, guys, and fans. Just know that, you know, at a certain time, we might start reviewing 30 for 30s again if ESPN pays up. But if not, we'll see.
Fans, just know that we do this for you. We do this for you. We are your voice. And so we always keep that in mind with even though we're getting so massive. Okay.
Five month holdout, but we're back and better than ever.
We're back. Strapping up again. Okay. So yes, we're reviewing Tiger, the documentary, an HBO produced two-part, very long. I think each one was about a movie length, like 90 minutes roughly, and it came out in January of 2021. It is now November of 2022. So, I mean, if we compare it to those other documentaries that we were reviewing, it's the most recently aired one of anything we reviewed here on this podcast. And like Sam said, it just kind of goes through his entire life from, you know, when he was very young, first took a club in his hand, and through winning the Masters in 2019. And I mean, he's one of the most famous people, let alone athletes on earth. We all know the big storyline, Sam, greatest of all time, arguably, all the wins, the domination, the sex scandal, the injuries, the DUI, the back fusions, the US Open on a broken leg. And
the recent car accident.
Yep, the car accident, exactly. So there's so much. And I mean, even if they had made it 1 year later, right, there'd be more, just because of you know, he's still sort of active. I will say that I don't think there's probably an athlete period that I like am more of a fan of. I am a hardcore Tiger fan. Like, there's really no one that does it for me quite like Tiger Woods. And I hadn't seen this before about 2 weeks ago when I watched this to review it. Took a few notes. And so just from the jump, I'll say that my kind of takeaway was I liked the documentary. I knew 99% of it as far as like what they talked about, maybe 100%. Some of like the certain
things. You knew 100%?
Yeah. Well, not 99, but basically everything.
Like his high school girlfriend and all that stuff, you knew about that?
I guess all the details of the things she said.
Okay, sure.
So this documentary was based off of a book. I can't remember who wrote it. Unendorsed autobiography or biography about Tiger Woods by somebody. which means the Tiger didn't sign off on the book or this documentary, though I have thoughts on that later. So it was based off the book. They interviewed the author briefly in this documentary as well, which makes sense, because he did a lot of the digging and the research that led to this documentary being made. I'm pretty sure he's the one that dug up the ex-girlfriend in high school, the Perkins waitress, all that kind of stuff. So let's just go. How about Nick? What are your kind of initial thoughts after watching it?
Yeah, I mean, it was very interesting to get down in the dirty details of everything. I feel like, although I didn't know 100% of the details, but knowing, a lot of like the main points, I felt like there's more things that were brought in that I didn't know. That was very interesting, like things like his high school girlfriend, hearing from the person, one of the mistresses, and kind of getting her firsthand accounts. I really liked how it started off just like through Earl Woods and kind of his quotes and all the enormous pressure that he put on the kid. I mean, I think that I tend to, that's right. Like what I remember is like he had Tiger on like late night shows when he was really young and that, but like then you start to think about it, like even that alone is putting such an enormous pressure on a kid. And then he has all these quotes saying like he's going to be God's gift to the earth or to the game of golf. He's going to transcend golf. He's going to, and I know all this came true, but still you just think of the effects just from like, a psychological perspective on a human being, and how Tiger had to endure that at such a young age throughout childhood, throughout, young adult life. And that just all the pressures with that. And then, as the documentary went on, I guess, like you can start to see like how these faults, if you will, or how these weaknesses of Tiger through infidelity and in that whole, like all of his scandals, how those make sense, I guess. Seeing like what his dad, his own scandals, seeing some of these like golf outings, and his dad would have extramarital affairs, and then his dad's friend would do the same thing, and just for like a kid to have to deal with that. And I feel like it was a well-rounded story around it, I guess, with all these details that I've heard like the main points of, but never like the full-on details and different hand accounts, I guess, if that makes sense. How about you, Sam?
Yeah, you kind of took the words right out of my mouth. Like, I was basically going to just start with, it makes a lot of sense why Tiger has struggled in a lot of ways. Obviously, not with golf. Golf was always his refuge, or I don't know if it was his escape, because they talk a lot about how other aspects of his life were his escape from, being famous and being a golfer, but he definitely like struggled with other aspects of his life. And that was probably because of all that pressure from Earl Woods and, a lack of a childhood. His high school girlfriend talks about, he's 16, 17, 18 years old, and he's going bowling for the first time, and he's seeing a movie for the first time, because all he did was go to a golf course from the time he was a year old till whenever. And if you just think about how many experiences and stuff he missed out on, and sure, fame and fortune and all these amazing things have happened to him, but he lived a very like one-sided, main focus was golf and all the attention was always on him, and it just didn't really create like a well-rounded human being, I guess I would say, and those struggles came out later on. And so yeah, like Ren, I couldn't agree more. I grew up absolutely idolizing Tiger Woods. He was like my main picture on my MySpace profile. I loved the guy, and idolized him. Like I wish I was as good as him and dreamed of being him when I was a little kid playing golf. But when you dig a little bit deeper and you realize all the struggles that came with it, it's like, I don't know if I would want to be him. And I think one of the main takeaways from this documentary, I grew up like thinking that Earl Woods was just such a great guy and that he shaped Tiger into, the amazing guy that I thought Tiger was and the amazing golfer. But After this documentary shines light on Earl Woods' flaws and how it affected Tiger later on in their relationship, I would say.
Well, yeah, let's just talk about that. Like, I mean, a lot of these documentaries that we've already reviewed, whether it was like, I think the last one that we reviewed was The Boz, right? I mean, and there's all these that like, these great athletes that are, you know, dysfunctional socially or whatever it may be because of their upbringing. That's like a trend that I mean, a lot of people that follow sports observe, and maybe none more than Tiger Woods. And so there's always that question of like, well, how, I mean, did you guys watch like King Richard, like about the Williams sisters? Like, yep. It's a similar pressures and intense childhoods and that a lot of sports parents do and have and experience and athletes experience now probably still, because let's face it, it works a lot of the time, at least a lot of the premier athletes are an example of when it works. Not that that's necessarily the only way, but yeah, like as sports fans, what do we want to have happen to these kids, like that are gonna become stars? Do we want like you can? It's just like a weird thing. You can't. There's like, I don't know. It's like a weird thing to root for, but like we're rooting for like these people to become stars, but maybe they only become that way because of like an unhappy life, you know. It's a weird like dichotomy of what you're rooting for.
And I've never really thought about like phenoms in sports, as you always hear about like child actors and actresses, right, who went on and like, or musicians and stuff. Like Aaron Carter just passed away, and he like was the Justin Bieber of when we were kids, and you know, had this awesome life that you thought, but then had all these struggles off of it. And I had never really like made the connection of young sports phenoms like Tiger and all the pressure that comes with it, you know, having a similar impact, even though he was super successful. You know, it kind of came back to bite him in a lot of ways too. And hopefully he can get over those demons a little bit better than some, but they're still there.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, and then we saw that playing out right when, well, throughout the entire kind of documentary about his life, especially like, so like when we talk about like his high school girlfriend, eventually, I think when he was like a freshman in college, his parents basically made him break up with her. And it was this really, the start of this kind of disturbing trend where he just cuts people out of his life completely, cold turkey, and never talks to them again. And we heard from a couple of his ex-friends in the documentary. They were interviewed, who he had just kind of cut out along the way. And one note that I had was like that might be one of the more disturbing things that this documentary kind of laid out for us. I mean, in a documentary full of like, you know, kind of messed up stuff happening and Tiger doing and stuff like that, but like, it's like both disturbing, but it's like, it makes so much sense, just because of everything they showed us. I mean, the first time it happened, like I said, with his girlfriend in high school, it was his parents that just made him do it, obviously, but it worked right after that. Like he continued to his career continued to rise in college, and soon after he was a pro, and soon after he was super dominant, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I don't know, I just found that really interesting because it makes sense, like, especially like as you're getting to be more of an adult and you're trying to like, you know, he's eventually like kind of cut off his dad, not completely cold turkey, but he stopped dealing with him as much. He cut off like this other friend after, he cut off a whole bunch of people after his sex scandal, including like his ex caddy, who was his best friend, and these other people. That was like kind of an interesting and, I don't know, kind of depressing insight into kind of how it works. His mind works, I guess.
Yeah, and that certainly like, you know, points to like, oh, it makes sense. You know, what I was saying before, just like the whole caddy relationship here, you know, that's, golf is a unique sport with, you know, just the one and one, such a close relationship between the two, you would think, and especially those two, and for them just to, drop, go cold turkey and not, interact and be such a, a feud between the two, or seemingly feud, is just insane. But, he's had to do that before to people. And so that's just kind of what he knows, to your point.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Tiger, especially, at least for me, and I think a lot of people, is like, I think it's not a unique take to say that we just like idolize these elite athletes that we see only dominating. And like, so when I was little, Tiger just winning. One of my favorite sports memories is just watching the 2008 US Open on TV when he won he hit a broken leg and won an extra round and came back, and the iconic moments of fist bumps and everything. And that's the same with other athletes, right? We just see them dominate and love it, and we're obsessed, and that's super common. And I feel like, I don't know how to say this, but like there's a lot of us just want to keep that separate from learning anything about them. And so like I remember when the sex scandal hit Thanksgiving or whatever, and I was like, oh great, I don't even want to read about this and can't help it. But like, and so like there's certain other athletes that I've done the same thing with, where I'm like, oh, I was a fan of you, but I'm just, it's super depressing when the XYZ happens. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't really know where I'm going with that, but I feel like he's like a better example of that than any other athlete for me, at least.
Is he like the one who defies all that though? Cause I feel like with all the scandals and all the trouble he's had and stuff, cutting people out and all of that, he's still by far the most beloved athlete in golf. Like anytime he's on or in contention, golf ratings like double, and you're walking a course that he's playing and there's three or four times as many fans as any other person. Yeah. And I just wonder if, if he wasn't Tiger Woods in golf, if Aaron Rodgers, if he did a lot of this similar stuff, he would be like losing a lot more fans, I feel like. And maybe it's the lack of like a team in golf, and the fact that he was just such a rising star and meant so much to the game that makes it unique. But I just feel like it's so unique in the aspect that he hasn't really lost fans despite things that I think in other sports would have cost him a lot of fans.
Yeah, he's never been like super hated. He just never has been. Like whenever anything has happened. And that's partly with, I think, and this is an interesting topic, like, I think it's partly because, well, first of all, he's in a tier that very few other, maybe no like football player has even been in, like of sports fame wise. Like, I mean, he's in the Michael Jordan tier, like with very few others. So there's that, and it's like an individual sport, yeah, which is also helps, like you said. But yeah, I mean, like, who else has been in their peak, like as famous sports wise, as him, Michael Jordan, like
Muhammad Ali?
Yeah, exactly.
Babe Ruth in like the 20s.
Yeah, but not even, right? Not even, because he wasn't an international, like.
Right, right. For the time period, I'm just saying, yeah.
Right. So it's just interesting. I don't know. And also like super love, like Michael Jordan, I think, didn't have like, I don't know exactly, but I don't think he had tons of people rooting against him, whereas like Tom Brady does. And even though he's super loved and considered the GOAT too.
Right.
And so, yeah, you're kind of impenetrable when you're that big, I think.
And I think it's worth mentioning, like, I do think he had a fair amount of people that strayed away from him right after this. But like, we're talking, years past. And so I think that, there's been some healing time or maybe rehabilitation time for him coming back. And so it's kind of like a comeback story as well that makes us romanticize it a little more. But at the end of the day, I mean, a lot of people still, cheered for him. And yeah, I think it's just because he was so, he was just the man for so long in golf. He was golf. I mean, you look at like golf courses that were built purely because of him and in creating like this sport to, you know, grow so well. And so,
yeah, I mean, you're right. Like no one does a redemption story like Tiger. He's done it over and over again.
Yeah, that's true. Coming back from surgery, coming back from like sex.
Another surgery.
Coming back from a car accident, coming back from a DUI, coming back from a divorce. It's just like constant.
Like, exactly. And like the latest one was literally after we thought the ultimate one happened. The ultimate one happened when he won the Masters again, finally after a decade of nothing, you know, back injuries and scandals. And then he won the Masters in 2019. But then literally earlier this year, like he had another one. Like he was at the Masters, yeah, and he was at doing press conferences saying, I didn't know if I would ever walk again 6 months ago. Like it just doesn't stop with all these things. And like, I'm not criticizing that. I love it. Like, I think right. It's great. And like the story is great and it's real. Also, another big part of it is why I think a lot of people are, even like now, just to talk about the present, like he definitely has changed in the way he even does interviews and stuff. Like he used to be completely, don't mess with me, you know, I'm going to be super private. And now he is definitely a lot more warmer. Yeah. Willing to share, willing to, and just, you can just tell he's changed. And I think across the board in golf media, you can see people saying that. Which is great, and it's another redemption in how he's evolved and become arguably like a better, more a functional person.
He's definitely like changed phases of his career from like killer, I'm gonna be the greatest of all time, to like, I'm just here enjoying it and I hope that I can win a couple more, and if I don't, my life is good anyways and I'm a dad. And you know,
and I think we that was documented when that shift kind of happened, because like for a while there, he was still going out there saying, I still want to have more majors than Jack. And then I think it was probably before 2019, maybe it was 2018, because 2019 won the Masters. Before that, he had kind of changed his tone where he's like, it's gravy now. With all these injuries, I'm just grateful to be playing. And that was like a shocker. People like were like, whoa, we got to transition to this new like message he's putting out, because for like what, almost two decades or whatever, he had been so, you know, binary about it.
Right.
Yeah, he was finally able to let go and just enjoy life. I feel like, given, you know, with all that adversity, he was given perspective. And yeah, obviously his family is, or his kids are very important to him, and so the ultimate honoring piece.
I mean, I could literally talk about Tiger all day. I spent so many hours of my life just literally thinking about all this stuff, like just like how he operates, his, you know, what's the deal with all this stuff. So Sam, just any other specific takeaways from this specific documentary, like things you saw that were interesting or anything?
No, like I said, I think my biggest takeaway was just the Earl Woods connection and how parenting can have such like a positive and negative impact at the same time, depending on how you do it, you know. Like, he's not the greatest golfer of all time, obviously, without Earl Woods making him, but also like sitting him in a high chair and having him watch over and over and over and all that stuff. But then he's also, maybe he's a happier person if he never has to do all that. And if Earl Woods is like, yeah, you could go play baseball if you want, you could go try soccer, son. And so I think
that. You want to be an accountant?
Yeah, you want to be an accountant? That's fine with me. But when you're literally like being compared to Gandhi and, you know, Muhammad Ali, all of these like amazing figures, and you're like 8 years old.
Right. Let's talk about, it was, I think, the opening scene of the documentary. They showed the audio of the interview that Earl Woods gave when Tiger Woods was very young. And it was like, he's going to heal racism forever, basically, I think is what he said, something like that. And it was like, yeah. Oh gosh. Okay. Whoa. And I didn't actually, I haven't remembered that. I had remembered him saying very young, like, yeah, he's going to be the greatest athlete of all time, but not like he's going to bring unity to the peoples of the earth, essentially, you know?
Right.
Yeah, so, unfortunately, that didn't work.
Yeah. Still waiting on that one. But yeah, so I mean, yeah, that was wild. And then it was interesting to see sort of the timeline of when Tiger finally kind of tried to push Earl out of his life, and be like, okay, I've had enough of your kind of toxicity. obviously, they still, I mean, there's so much background and so much history with them. I hadn't known the exact timeline, but I remember watching tournaments and they're like, yeah, Earl isn't at this, and you hear rumblings of like, yeah, they're not necessarily on good terms right now, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously I knew like Earl's issues before I heard that, read about that before too. But
and it also just speaks to the complexity of relationships. Like Earl Woods was Tiger Woods' best friend, but also in a sense, like his worst enemy, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah. That's crazy.
One of the, I thought, really good interviews was the Earl Woods' friend, the golf pro, who had, like, I think he described it as they're both like chasing skirts on the golf course, him and Earl. And he did an interview on this, and his interview was super compelling, right? He was like, one point he was like crying, and another point he was like apologizing to Tiger for like letting him see them do that at such a young age. And he, like, you could literally tell he was felt so responsible for a lot of Tiger's, I don't know, for maybe this whole entire sex scandal, who knows, but like for a lot of his issues. And that was like I thought that was the best interview they got, the most interesting and revealing.
Definitely. I was going to ask you, Ren, since it's the most recent, or you're the one who's seen it most recently. What did you just think about like his whole going to Vegas and like, sorry, that's Mosby running by, going to Vegas and like, you know, being a goody two shoes to start. And then like slowly it seemed like he became like more of a bad boy and like was in the VIP lounges by himself. And like, he started going with like Charles Barkley and Michael Jordan and stuff. Right. And then and he was kind of the innocent one, like, oh, cute little Tiger's here, doesn't know how to talk to girls and stuff. And then all of a sudden, he's just like there by himself with like 10 women at once. And
yeah,
what were your thoughts on that?
I mean, that was a wild sight that they got a little bit of video of that. That was number one. I was like, whoa, there's some stuff of him just, I mean, it was mostly just walking through a crowd of people in a casino. But yeah, I mean, that was a crazy story. I wasn't completely shocked by, I had heard something about that before. It was interesting to see how like Michael Jordan was there, like literally like leading him astray. He's like, yeah, this is how you become a degenerate, you know?
Right.
It's so funny.
But yeah. But it was, I mean, it was kind of funny to see. I mean, like we talked about how he's awkward and I mean, he doesn't have to be able to talk to him. And maybe he still can. It doesn't matter. Tiger Woods, like, you know. But yeah, that was kind of a weird scene. And then to hear about from the main, I guess, person that that was interviewed in the documentary, to hear her kind of story of how she met him in Vegas, like the promoter, whoever that was, that he ended up having an affair with one of the first women, arguably. I don't know if it was. It wasn't first, but, and that was like a very interesting kind of genesis of that. And that's how they kind of got into the whole scandal.
Yeah. I thought that was really fascinating too. Like the women talking about how the relationship started and how they like saw changes in him, and they all, or what was it? Rachel? Was that the,
I don't know.
I forget. Whatever the one is who traveled like abroad with him for that golf tournament, or
yeah, that was like the same promoter that he met.
Yeah,
maybe that was a club in New York, but I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, and just hearing her like talk about how when they were like behind closed doors, he just like could never stop talking and was like a little kid and stuff. It was just
right. Kind of crazy. Yeah, I mean the whole theme of like him compartmentalizing everything, and he literally consciously was like doing that. And he was telling these girls like that that's how he has to operate, like his compartmentalize his dealings with them and his family and the media and the public life and golf. And yeah, it's just, it just paints the picture of this kind of scary life he was living.
For sure. Rudy, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Charles Barkley, Michael Jordan, and Tiger Woods are on a golf course playing straight up. How many strokes does Charles Barkley give? Or how many strokes does Tiger Woods have to give Charles Barkley? And how many strokes does he give Michael Jordan? Because you know those three are definitely probably playing for a lot of money on the golf course.
A lot of money, yeah.
But like, how do they make it fair? How many strokes?
I mean,
like right now,
like during Tiger's prime, because like during those Vegas days, like you know they're in Vegas probably playing a little golf once in a while.
Was Tiger?
I don't know.
I feel like he couldn't go to a course. No, maybe. Yeah,
they played together at some point for sure.
I know they. I'm sure like now, right now, like maybe they played today. Like at least him and MJ, because they live in the same neighborhood. MJ plays every day. But obviously Tiger's was not as good as he used to be.
Right.
I mean, if we're talking Tiger in his prime, do we think Charles Barkley was just as bad back then as he is now?
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
He's probably better now.
Yeah. Probably worse.
So are we talking 50 strokes over the course of 18? Like, that's what I'm questioning.
Honestly, yeah, probably.
That's probably too high, but not much, I would say. It's at least, like, 35.
But if they're on a normal course or, like, non-Masters, non-major course, like, Tiger's probably shooting 60 to 65.
Well, he's not shooting 60. Let's not – I just assume 60.
he's for sure at worst shooting, like – 65-70, but he could go low.
Yeah,
but on just a typical course,
what do you mean a typical course? Like they're gonna play a good course.
Not like in major quality like shape where they're putting pins like at random places, and even if they, right. Yeah,
the condition isn't like his club, like which is long enough. So yeah, let's assume he shoots 65.
Like Charles is shooting like 115.
That's 50 strokes.
That's 50 strokes.
Yeah, you're right. You're kind of like arguing against yourself because you're saying like these courses are tough. Like he's playing some tough courses, and Charles Barkley would have to play those same courses.
I mean, I think Chuck could break 100.
I don't know. Have you seen that swing?
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, it's right. I think it's right around 100. I don't think it's 115, but yeah, I guess maybe it's 105.
Right.
That he's shooting. But okay, interesting, better question. Is Tiger versus MJ today? Because MJ's scratch, from what I've heard. And he plays every day for a ton of money.
But what is trash for MJ, like 80s?
Yeah. He's scratch, so he's always in the 70s or lower.
Wait, Tiger or MJ?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said he's trash.
No, scratch. So he shoots even par on average.
Oh, okay. I mean, it can't be much, right?
Yeah.
Tiger maybe gives
probably
like
five.
A couple strokes aside. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. How much are they
playing? Yeah, I was going to say five as well.
And how sick is their Nike attire and their Jordan attire that they're just rocking everywhere?
You'd have to give everybody else like 10 strokes. Just out of the attire.
Strokes gained attire. Strokes gained swag.
For sure.
Yeah, that's I would be their caddy. I would take that loop.
Could you imagine that? Like MJ's just smoking a big cigar, Tiger's limping around everywhere.
No, he's obviously riding.
He's riding, but he's still limping, getting into the cart, wincing every time he swings. Hey, all right, we need to talk about the elephant in the room here. How many majors does Charlie Woods win?
Oh, God.
How many majors does 13-year-old Charlie Woods win?
You see, he had a, I hate to say this, but you see, he had a growth spurt. He's like, since we saw videos of him like a couple months ago, and they, he's like a lot taller than he was last time he was in the public.
Oh, really?
Weird. But I say zero majors. I don't think he's gonna be bored by golf by the time.
And did you see his swing? It looks exactly like Rory McIlroy. It came out.
Yeah, it's a beautiful swing. Yeah.
It's nuts. I bet he's gonna be a stud. He's gonna do everything his dad never could. All the flaws that his dad had off the course is gonna make up for him.
Yeah, he's okay.
Because he doesn't have any trauma in his life.
Sure.
I'm sure his life's been amazing.
There was never that holiday season when it was just the best. That November. I don't even know how old he was then, but anyways. Yes. Anyway, what else did I want? I wrote down this line. I said I knew all of it. This is after I watched it. I knew all of it, but I had shielded myself from ever watching the mugshot video. And I was kind of sad to watch it. I was very sad to watch it.
Are you the type of fan who like is so into it that you can't put yourself through the pain of seeing the truth?
With Tiger, maybe. like I said, there's no one comparable to me than Tiger. And so like, yeah, like I was fairly realistic about everything that's happening, but like when the DUI happened, I was like, great, not again, first of all, because this already happened once when he's in trouble. And then I'm like, okay, I'll read this stuff. And then like, it got leaked. And oftentimes when stuff gets leaked, I don't watch it out of principle. And then I was just like, I also just don't want to watch it because I'm gonna be sadder. And then I watched it 2 weeks ago in the doc. He's like, you know, he's like fading in on consciousness and having his mugshot taken, saying stuff that doesn't make sense. When he got pulled over, he thought he was in California, Florida. And I was just like, yeah, this is a major bummer. So yeah, that sucks.
It's tough to watch. That one was tough to watch.
Brutal.
And then he got in another car accident recently, and I was like, all that I could think of was I had seen this, and I was like, I don't know if he was sober when he got in that accident.
You
know,
I mean, that's what everyone thought. That's what everyone, you know, didn't want to speculate that that was what it was, and we never found out, which is also suspect. Well, I guess maybe it's not suspect because we were given the reason that he was just speeding around this dangerous bend. I've read so many articles about this bad street and it's super windy and whatever.
Did you Google Maps that street, Ren? Come on.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Of course. This was about a year ago, a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago now. Of course. Everyone was looking up where the crash happened. Yeah. I was snowboarding when I got the thing on my phone. Well, I don't know when this happened, like a couple winters ago when I got in the crash. And I just like packed up my snowboard and went home. I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna focus. Like I gotta read about this, watch the coverage.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome. You're a diehard. All right. This made me just think. Since we're not really doing a Mount Rushmore, we have to think of our Mount Rushmore of like sports fandom right now. So like Ren's clearly Tiger's on there.
Like people?
Yes. Like athletes. Who in your lifetime you would put like you loved either watching them or you've just been a big fan. They like changed how you played or you idolized them. Doesn't have to be necessarily local, even though Rudy's will probably be like four Minnesota people.
Four gophers.
But so Ren, you got Tiger on there for sure.
Okay.
Let's brainstorm another three here really quick. This is how we can end the episode.
Okay. Torrey Hunter's gotta be on there for me. I always give the anecdote of like, I used to just walk around with a baseball glove and a ball, and I would just like run up against walls and I was robbing, you know, home run.
Sure.
So it's gotta be Torrey Hunter. And he's one of those guys that I idolize and that I haven't been disappointed by because pretty much everybody else that I grew up was, I was and have been. And yeah, my life's horrible. I don't know. Another one. This is probably young. This isn't active. Like, what are you talking?
No, it doesn't have to be active. It could be like in your lifetime. Like it's your Mount Rushmore. Like you're in your backyard. You're like, I need to put four faces of my favorite athletes who shaped my sports fandom, who made me want to start a podcast, right back here. Like you literally work at sports broadcasting. There had to be some influential people.
I mean, I hate to say it, but it's Brett Favre.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That and, aged well.
Yeah. Speaking of, I mean, he's example A, B, C, D, E of being disappointed. I mean, I was like lumping my throat. This was before any of the like absolutely shitty stuff. When he went to the Vikings, when I was super hardcore like Packer fan when I was little. I was watching the flight coverage, you know, on the news of him flying to Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie. And I was like lumping my throat, like watching it, like, oh, this is.
Meanwhile, Rudy and I are, let's go, baby.
Yeah. This is before school, Chance. But I mean, yeah. Anyway, so I'll probably put him there. And then, I don't know, Michael Phelps, maybe. Okay. Just because he was so massive. Like and I would...
Some sort of Olympic connection. You love the Olympics.
Yeah. I'm absolutely obsessed with the Olympics, and he is like a larger than life, especially when he was at his peak powers for like over a decade. I mean, huge, super famous, and you know, another greatest ever. So I'll go with those. I don't know if it's hard or fast. But...
I feel like I have a lot of the same ones, Ryan.
Yeah.
Like Torrey Hunter, I mean, in Minnesota when I was playing baseball, like you always practiced jumping up into a wall to catch a, you know, home run, right? Yes. And then you always like, you know, the batting stance was like an easy one to mimic of your favorite player. I loved Michael Phelps growing up. You know, I would be like the arm, like, you know, when he would bend over and do the arm stretch.
Yeah.
I would do that too. Kevin Garnett was like probably the largest one for me. Just, you know, playing Nerf basketball against myself, against imaginary myself and you know, keeping track and just you know, having like probably four or five different Garnett jerseys at any one point in time, you know, growing up. I don't know. I don't think I had any like huge, like I loved Randy Moss, of course, but nothing to the degree of like Torrey Hunter or KG, I would say.
Right.
So then Tiger. Yeah. But Tiger. But I wasn't Google Map and stuff back then.
That was like a year and a half ago. okay. Mine isn't super, super exciting, I don't think. Tiger for sure. LeBron for sure. Like I've always been the growing up in central Wisconsin, like the Bucks were terrible and they were like 3.5 hours away. So I never went to a Bucks game as a kid, never really watched them on TV very much. I was always just kind of like a fan of whatever team LeBron was on, like every finals that he's ever been, I've rooted for their team. And I mean, he's been in the league since we were 10 years old.
Yeah.
And we've known about him before that. So he's up there. Oh, I was just thinking. Probably Randy Johnson, big unit.
Wow.
I loved Randy Johnson as a kid. I thought he was so awesome. And I would always try to throw a slider and stuff, even though I never could. But video game, he was always my first choice, like favorite baseball player of all time.
Wow. I didn't know that about you. I just saw this thing that Eduardo Perez, you know, his commentary, he's a former player, works for ESPN as a broadcaster. And he was like, did this thing about, he owned Randy Johnson because he knew he was tipping his pitches his entire career, apparently.
What?
Apparently it was such a simple glove open, breaking ball, glove closed fastball or the opposite or something. And he met Randy Johnson, or he like came up to him like a couple years ago and like talked to him about it. And it was like, Randy was like, had no idea. And apparently no one else did either.
And Randy Johnson pitched for like 20 years.
Yeah, he was one of the best pitchers of all time.
Hall of Famer, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, so can you imagine? Like, hopefully he told his teammates.
Yeah, you'd hope, but it didn't get around. At least maybe he did it for a couple of years. And then also, Randy Johnson is now a, have you seen this, a photographer? Did one of you guys send me this?
Yeah, he's an NFL photographer. He's on, like, the sideline of NFL games, like, in a full, like, NFL, like,
thing.
Really?
He shoots game. I mean, he has a website. He shoots wildlife. He does safaris, and he shoots NFL games.
And is
he majored in photography in college.
Yeah, it's always been a big, like, passion of his. Yeah, and so once he was like, once you retire from professional sports, you don't need money, but you're like 40. It's like, what should I do? And his logo is literally a bird upside down, like a dead bird.
I'm googling.
It's hilarious. Yeah, so I think I'd probably put Randy on there. Then the running nerd in me would definitely put Steve Prefontaine on there.
Oh yeah. Wait, is that flat for 4 or 3? Wait, Randy, you got.
That was for Randy Johnson.
Okay, so I just Googled Randy Johnson and it says American. Sorry, hold on here. It says American photographer. Like in Google, that's like what it, you know, that's like crazy. What he's famous for.
That's awesome. That pops up. I respect that. That's super cool.
It is cool.
You don't see, like, I mean, I'm sure it happens every day and it's just not advertised, but like athletes who are like big time athletes who just go on to do like everyday duties who aren't, you know, don't really get like extra attention or like interviews and stuff because of their name, but are just like, yeah, I'm just going to go be a photographer. Like,
this is a great Mount Rushmore, by the way, because there's a couple like that pop into mind, like, right. Like Bernie Williams, remember him? The Yankees. Yeah, like he's Yankees. Like he had like a Dave Matthews style band. And then he made records and stuff. And then Sylvia Fowles just retired. And she told us all, she told the media that her plan was to, she's already going to school to be a, what's the thing where you embalm dead bodies?
That's right.
She like interned at one of those places like in town before she retired. Like, isn't that nuts?
That is nuts. It's super
so
cool.
So specific, and she was like super passionate about it, which is so cool. But like,
Can you imagine being in, like, a random mortician in the Twin Cities? And they're like, "Hey, this is Sylvia Fowles. Can I intern with you?" You're like, "Huh?
Hall of Fame basketball player? What?
This is a prank." Yeah. This is the prank, right? Where's the cameras?
Right. Either that or they wouldn't know who she is.
Yeah.
That's true as well.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, that's a good category though, because we could like probably Google that and find a list of these wacky jobs that former athletes are doing now.
Right. There's probably some awesome ones, like, I don't know. Some random I don't know. I was just going to name a random athlete. It's like a mailman now. Just like, it doesn't need to be, but it just.
Well, yeah, it also depends on the level of athlete you were, right? Like, if this is a moneymaker for you or it doesn't matter and it's like a passion job, you know?
Yeah, right. Probably a lot of both out there, I'm sure. Like Randy Johnson, passion for sure.
Yeah, I don't think he's making that much money either on his lion safari pictures. Which are good. I look through them. They're fine. He's good, but you know, he's not grinding super hard on like getting published and stuff or whatever publication.
Right. Not staying up, burning the midnight oil or whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a good podcast back. I feel like that was a good Rust Buster, you know?
Rust Buster. I like it. Yeah, I think so too.
We needed it.
Good.
So what now then? Do we go back to 30 for 30s or just find random? You know, there is this Jeremy Lin one that I've been meaning to watch. Have you guys seen that on Netflix or something?
No, I've heard about it. I think I haven't seen it yet.
I think I've heard of it, but I have not seen it.
Well, I mean, I know I've watched one of those Jeremy Lin ones like probably 10 years ago, but some just came out. Like one just came out in the past month, 2 months. Apparently it's good. You know me. I love
using
Jeremy Lin. So.
I would also love to watch the Manti Te'o one.
I watched that. Yeah.
Did you?
It is good.
I haven't seen it yet.
All right. What if we watch like 5 30 for 30s and then we mix in a random one and then we watch 5 30 for 30s and we mix in a random one or something like that.
Okay. Do we
yeah,
know?
I mean, as long as our contract dispute gets figured out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
Yeah, we're not conceding anything at this time.
But HBO, okay, I actually do want to say this about HBO in case they do pick us up at ESPN, if you're listening. Take it what you will, I guess, but HBO's documentaries are so good. Like the Tiger documentary, the stuff that they can find, just watching home videos from when Tiger was dancing around with his high school girlfriend is just absurd.
Yeah, that's wild. That was wild. It was Isn't a little unnerving to see that. I was like,
I know.
I don't want to see him this way.
But it's also like, I know it probably isn't that tough in theory. Like you just got to find that family and they probably have videos that they've kept for years because it's a big deal to them, obviously. Yeah. But like back then, you know, videotapes and stuff could easily be broken or destroyed or thrown out and stuff. Or like now everything's on the cloud and you could find everything. But like, I just think it's those documentaries are so impressive. HBO like continuously amazes.
Okay, that reminds me of something that I teased and I wanted to bring up. Which is that, you know, like I said, this was not endorsed by Tiger documentary. Neither was the book that this was based off of. Tiger was not interviewed in this, which we could plainly see. There was sound bites from him pulled from over the course of his career. And even in the end, there was this like him in a car riding. And we're like, wait, what's this? Is this him being interviewed in this documentary? Clearly it wasn't. Otherwise, it would have been in the documentary a whole bunch. That, I believe, was a deal he did with Gulp Digest, because I pretty much consumed like every type of interview there ever was already. So I think I recognized it. So that brings me to my point, which is that it wasn't endorsed by him, but throughout this documentary I was watching, I was like, okay, how did they get this video? And how did they get rights to this? Every once in a while, there was stuff. I was like, a lot of this is now owned by other media things and they could easily buy them from an NBC, et cetera, or channel buy them. But certain things, like some of this B-roll of him playing, is, you know, owned by either Tiger, whatever his brand is called, LLC, or his foundation, which they talked about a little bit in that video, that, which also would be a lot specifically hard to buy from any other partners because they just wouldn't have that. So in the credits, I make sure I paused it on thanks to or special thanks or video photos, whatever it's called. And you read down the line, which is a whole bunch of lines, Tiger and Tiger Foundation was given credit. So yeah, it wasn't endorsed and he didn't do an interview, but they worked with them to get footage. And
by God, Ren.
Yeah, so just like something like this doesn't happen without something that of this level, all the parties have an understanding. Now, I'm not saying there was like any sort of slant, but there is an understanding there with the final kind of product.
And that right there, folks, is why you tune in to Documentary Diehards. You don't tune in for Nick Rudolph or Sam Anderson.
No, you don't.
You tune in for the little details that Ren makes happen.
You let him crack the code, and he just cracked the code on the Tiger documentary.
Wow. Oh, my God. That was awesome. I would have thought to look at the credits. I never would have thought that Tiger Woods Foundation or Tiger had, you know.
Because it's crazy to see that, because all this stuff puts him in a bad light, right? It's like, obviously he doesn't want to be a part of it because it's talking about all of these terrible things he's done. But then you also see these things that they just conflict. And so, yeah, it was, right. I was like finding myself like only thinking about that during certain parts of it. I was like, wait, how does this all work? How do they make this?
Wow, I never would have thought of that. But also, yeah, Tiger's like, sure, I'll let you have this video of me making this 50-foot bender and fist pumping and the crowd going wild. Oh, I guess. You're going to make this documentary anyways. Might as well make it awesome. Super interesting. Great thought right there, Ren.
Well, it was awesome to be back with you guys.
Yes, it was.
After 5 months and a week, I think. This is now episode 63. We've done 62 before this. So episode 63 is now in the books.
But we can't label it as that because we need to label it like special edition.
So okay. Okay. Fair.
Yeah. So just remember that. Want to mess up the number?
Should we label it as number one of like the some other
one asterisk?
I say we call it bonus content.
Ooh, bonus.
Bonus something. Just for, you know, for our fans. Eventually we'll start the Patreon and.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Usually a bonus episode is through a paywall.
We're not quite there yet. And our fans have been just emailing us and pestering us to get back. So we figured we'd release this one. But future bonus episodes will be on the Patreon.
Sounds good. This fans, this one was for you. Happy to be back. All right, bye.